How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Just want to give a little warning here. The following podcast with Jay King and Michael Pina can feel a little unsettling at times because the timing of the tracks when recorded via Skype was a little off. So some of the conversation sounds a little jumbled. One guy is a few seconds ahead, the other is a few seconds behind. So please try to bear with us there. We decided not to record the entire thing again. I don't know how to fix it. I'm stupid. But hopefully it won't be too bad to listen to. It's only a little bit off. So hopefully you enjoy it anyway.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay them, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King, locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hello and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today it's me, your boy, Jay King, joined by Michael Pina from Bleacher Report, Vice Sports, the Big Three podcast, which is one of our competitors. I probably shouldn't have him on this podcast, but we're by far the best podcast about the Celtics anyway, and we're a daily podcast, which they are not. So... welcome aboard, Michael. Now that I diminished your podcast, which is actually great, people, you should all check it out.
It welcome was. Aboard. That game was fun. Quickly start by saying that I feel like I'm cheating on B. Rob and Rich Levine, who are my two podcast co-hosts. And
yeah, but you know what? When a prettier girl comes,
great
along,
metaphor,
it's
Jay.
Tempting.
Great metaphor. But yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm a fan of your guys. Nice pod too. And yeah, what a game last night.
Let's start with the defense, because it was at once like the least surprising and most surprising aspect of that game, because they have for years, especially when Kevin Durant wasn't blasting them in Boston a few months ago, the Celtics have guarded the Warriors well, and it's because they match up really well with them. But for this current team, defense has been an issue until lately. And now, you know, a week ago, the Celtics had what I probably considered at the time their best defensive performance of the season against Cleveland. And then last night, we're recording this Thursday afternoon. Last night was just much better than that. The Warriors scored, I think it was 91.2 points per 100 possessions, which is brutal. Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson combined for a single point in the fourth quarter. Avery Bradley blew it all up. Is their defense, like, is it back?
I think it's a little say their early to back. Say their defense is back. You know,
After they gave up 900 points to the Clippers in the fourth quarter, you think it's
I don't know how sustainable those shots were, but yeah, I think their effort last night, their intensity was on point. Bradley's defense on Curry, as you mentioned, throughout, you know, basically every single time they've matched up, Bradley has his number as good as anybody. Marcus Smart had a terrible offensive performance shooting the ball last night. His defense was there. They made every single shot just about in the half court that Klay Thompson attempted, was contested, did a great job against him. He had one of his most inefficient, I mean, he's in a shooting slump right now, but last night that was a super inefficient game for him. And just like when you look at this Warriors team, and since Kevin Durant's been out, they've been very pedestrian offensively. And I know Brad Stevens said last night that, you know, this team is the core of a championship team from 2 years ago, core of a team that won 73 games last year. But, like, they really aren't even close to as deep because of what happened when they had to sign Durant and get rid of Bogut, get rid of Harrison Barnes. And, I mean, Matt Barnes last night was atrocious. He didn't give them anything. Like, he was really bad. And so when KD's not there, you kind of see, like, the MVP case for KD, like, really sprouted last night, in my opinion. And not to take too much away from the Celtics, because I thought they played really well, but I think the Warriors kind of shot themselves in the foot a little bit, too.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. What I will say is the two games against Cleveland and Golden State, you know, all season we've seen the Celtics screw up communication and, like, screw up switches and screw up the scouting report. And you'd see Brad Stevens over on the sideline, like, slapping his hand and furious, fuming, because guys have just screwed up the scouting report. Against Cleveland, against Golden State, they were locked in. Like, say what you want about the Golden State offense and how it's struggling and how having Patrick McCaw instead of Kevin Durant isn't exactly helpful. But from a standpoint of forcing the Warriors to take tough, contested shots and forcing their non-shooters, whether it was Draymond Green or McCaw or Andre Iguodala, to take shots, the Celtics were locked in, I would say, from the beginning of the game. And in the fourth quarter, I mean, they held the Warriors scoreless for 2 3-minute droughts. They had a 15-0 run. Avery Bradley and Kelly Olynyk were, like, bracketing Stephen Curry in the pick-and-roll coverage and just abusing him, which was awesome. Kelly Olynyk had the best game of his life. Let's just talk about
Kelly. How can you not?
I wasn't even,
like,
planning on talking about Kelly Olynyk this early. But once his name came up, we have to talk about Kelly Olynyk. Are the Warriors a good matchup for him?
Like, yeah, I have no idea. I think I actually watched all of his baskets a couple hours ago, rewatched them. And, you know, a lot of them came, and I don't want to pick on Matt Barnes too much, but a lot of them came with Barnes matched up against him. And, you know, Barnes would overhelp on a whoever the screener was, pick and roll, and just leave Olynyk to cut down the paint wide open. And, you know, Kelly got a bunch of his points on just open layups at the rim. He knocked down 1-3 from the wing, but yeah, he was tremendous. A lot less awkward and uncomfortable looking than he normally is, and I don't know if it's a particular matchup thing, but I will say that he really took advantage of the Matt Barnes matchup last night.
Yeah, and the Warriors, obviously, they switch a lot, and a lot of times they put smaller guys on him, and the Celtics have really done a good job of finding him in those situations. Like, I think last year, one of his career highs, it was like 29 points or something against the Warriors. I'm not sure if that's the exact number, but it was one of his best games last year against the Warriors in the game they lost in Boston. And then last night, that might have been the best game of his career. Would you say that was the best game of Kelly Olynyk's career? Offense,
I think defensively he was a monster.
He was doing that.
You I read your write-up with the lead with Bradley's quote about Olynyk and him and the pick and roll coverage with Curry. And, like, I watched that game. So I watched that game in bed. My girlfriend was sleeping. I had my iPad with the game and the laptop on my lap. And, like, Olynyk like kind of falls on the ground. They knock the ball away. Bradley and Olynyk trap Curry up top. They knock the ball away. Like Olynyk comes up with it, and like I'm just like pumping my fist. Like it was amazing. I have no idea how that happened. And you kind of look at like Olynyk, Olynyk's defensive rating last night's game was like 0.67 points per 100 possessions, which is just an absolutely absurd number. And you know, through his entire tenure with the Celtics, the team's defense has performed better with him on the floor. I think he's, you know, this isn't like breaking news, but I think he's a very underrated positional defender. He knows where to be for the most part. I think he gets called for, when he's picking up guards on switches and they drive on him, I think a lot of the time he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt with whistles. But he works his ass off. He's a huge body, which is a big thing, obviously, when you're an interior defender in the NBA. And he played his ass off last night. And I think he might have been one of the best players on the team.
It took people a long time to come around to the fact that he's a helpful defender. And I think that's because he's white and down a lot. So, and it's not like he's blocking shots or anything like that. Like, he's just really good positionally. He's more mobile than people expect. Like, he stays with guys on switches. When they played the Cavaliers, they left him on an island.
LeBron settled for jumpers
a few times. Yep. And for the most part, yeah, LeBron settled for jumpers, and he hit at least one of them. But I mean, if you get LeBron to settle for a jumper over the top of Kelly Olynyk in that matchup, that's the desired goal. So Olynyk more helpful than people think defensively. I think he's finally starting to get his credit. People are finally starting to catch on to the fact that he can play himself a little defense.
Just a brief digression. I saw Chris Mannix tweeted that Olynyk was probably due for, you know, 10 plus million. And I thought that was kind of a no-brainer heading into the season. I think that dude is getting a lot of money. I don't know who's going to pay him, but yeah, he's going to get his, I mean, his skill set is just so valued as, you know, a 7-footer who can shoot three, space the floor, make plays off the dribble. And you know, he's at least an average defender. So, yeah, he's going to make a lot of money this summer.
Yeah, yeah. And he's really played well. Yeah, I mean, he had a few rough games there. But, ever since the shoulder issue went away, he's been a lot better. Kelly Olynyk, he's going to make some money. I've had some people tell me they think he's going to make some serious money. And restricted free agency can be a weird thing. It can really screw with guys and push down the contract offers. But I would expect Kelly Olynyk to get some big money. And his future is weird with the Celtics, because if they go out and get a maximum guy, which obviously they want to, then they won't be able to keep Olynyk. He's one of the guys that they'll have to renounce to get that maximum cap space. But you know, if they don't find that guy, then Olynyk, obviously still a possibility. He's been helpful for them for years. Let's move on from Kelly Olynyk. That's more Kelly Olynyk talk than
I was ready to go 45 minutes about Kelly Olynyk, but we can move on if you want to.
Well, we can
no, yeah,
I'm just Kelly Olynyk and Kelly positional defense. Okay, we talked about the defense a little bit. Two-part question. Why weren't the Celtics defending well earlier in the season? And can they hold up against the top offenses that they're going to need to play, whether it's Cleveland or Toronto or Washington or whoever in the playoffs?
I think one of the big things, obviously, is health.
Yep.
If you just look at who was in and out of the lineup earlier this year, Horford's concussion, going back to that, going back to Crowder's sprained ankle. I think Crowder looks, even when he came back, I think if you look at, you know, the weeks and immediate months after he returned, he looks a lot better now than I think he did then in terms of his movement, his fluidity. He was tremendous last night.
Oh, yeah. Free throw attempts are way up. Since the All-Star break, he has a 13.2 rebound rate, which is
one of the first or second shots of the game. Early shot, he tipped it out to Isaiah on a miss. He kind of got into the scrum there, and like those are the plays that he was not really making earlier in the year, and particularly when this team goes small, they really need Crowder to be active on the boards, and he was last night, mostly from the small forward position, as well as
yeah, and for more to that point, since the All-Star break, he's leading Celtics in defensive rebound rate, which is probably not ideal. Mm-hmm. Probably not ideal from the standpoint of your small forward is leading you in rebounding, but the Celtics have done a much better job on the glass lately, and his commitment to it and his increased mobility.
I 100% agree with that, and I think that obviously the Isaiah Thomas question transitioning to another reason why the defense is a little wearisome, for lack of a better term, is just kind of how teams are going to be able to target him in the playoffs. And I personally am of the mind that that is a little bit overblown. I think Isaiah works his ass off on defense. He contests shots. He did a pretty good job last night, I thought, staying attached to Steph Curry when he was, his assignment was Curry, staying with them in the half court, fighting around screens on and off the ball. He knows where he's supposed to be. He doesn't get beat on back cuts. So I think if you look at just kind of how much responsibility he has offensively versus a lot of the guys in his position and the other MVP candidates, offensive MVP superstars in the league, like Harden and Westbrook, I think Isaiah Thomas's defense is like, I don't know if it's as good or better, but I mean, his energy and his focus is definitely superior to Westbrook and Harden. And so I know that the numbers don't bear out positively in his favor. And last night, their defensive rating was, I think, the worst. It was very good. They only allowed 101 points per 100 possessions with Thomas on the floor, which is a very good number, but relative to everyone else on the team who played a significant role, that was the worst on the team. So I think that's something definitely to watch out for as well.
Yeah, definitely. And to me, one big change is the Celtics, like, they were playing a lot of young guys. Jaylen Brown at the beginning of the year was a horrendous defender. Jaylen Brown now is decent. Like, he makes some really impressive plays. He still screws up from time to time.
Yeah, can we talk about that for 2 seconds? So you were in the locker room.
Let's talk about that.
In the scrum when he said that he did not say anything, right? And so are you what is the deal with Curry behaving like that? Did his brain break, or is Jaylen lying? Like, what? Because, like, clearly, you know, he made this international sign language symbol for stop talking and pointed at him. And it was like, okay, clearly Jaylen Brown was talking shit, should not have been. And, you know, Jaylen clapped his hands at LeBron last week. He's getting into it a little bit defensively, and that's good. He's showing confidence on that end. But where do you stand on what exactly transpired last night?
Yeah, so that was, I thought for sure he must have said something to set Curry off, because like that was out of character. He's a guy, Curry, obviously he celebrates shots, like he'll spin around and run back on defense while the ball's still in the air. He's a little bit of a showman. And by a little bit, I mean a lot of bit of a showman. But that was like overtly taunting a rookie. So that was bizarre. It was funny because I walked over to Jaylen Brown and I'm like, oh man, I'm gonna ask him about, you know, getting worked over by someone and then humiliated it on national television. But you know, he seemed to think it was just amusing, like it was pretty funny. He promised if he's
lying, didn't he say and he lied, it was cute.
So yeah, I think that was overblown. Like,
yeah,
it was kind of in the middle of a sentence. I don't think he was trying to like talk. I think he was saying like that was a nice shot.
Okay.
Like it wasn't like, oh yeah, that finger point, that was cute, man, sucker. But it was people are blowing that quote out of proportion a little bit. But I don't think he meant any disrespect by that. The one thing that might have set Curry off was remember when Zaza did that super dance earlier in the season, and then Jaylen Brown after the game came out and said how disrespectful that was, and they were going to play the Warriors later, and they were gonna see him again and whatever, like yeah, we're gonna beat him next time, guys, and maybe Curry took offense to that. I don't know. That would be like Isaiah Thomas level chip on the shoulder if he did see those quotes and remember them for months until he hit a preposterous shot and then pointed in his face. So I don't know. That was just a hilarious celebration. Just so over the top, so crazy. Beautiful move though.
Oh yeah, I mean it's so easy for us to be like oh yeah, you should have stayed grounded on that. But it's like, I don't know how many seconds were on the clock. There must have been like what, three or four left in the third quarter, I think, and that was at the end of the third quarter, right? Yeah, and you know,
yeah, correct. I'm glad you remember that from your
and like yeah, it's but it's like, if anyone's gonna jump for a pump, it's like Steph Curry at the buzzer is something you really need to contest. But yeah, I feel like the Warriors might be just a little bit frustrated right now. I talked a little bit earlier about just how much they've struggled recently. And, you know, a lot was made recently with Isaiah talking about Brad Stevens experimenting with lineups and how that did not sit well with him in game 63 or whatever. And, like, it's pretty funny because last night Steve Kerr's lineups in the fourth quarter and in the second half were a little ludicrous. And like,
but I will say, like, there's not much they can do. Like, they only have a handful.
Right,
of
I agree with that. And you can definitely make the case, just like you could make the case with Stevens when he did not have Al Horford, he did not have Jerebko. And, you know, it's getting your young guys experience, it's experimenting with different lineups that you might need in the playoffs just to see what's happening. It's very Popovichian. Steve Kerr obviously is a disciple of Greg Popovich and he believes in getting everybody involved, but playing James Michael McAdoo for like no reason that's what kickstarted the 15-0 run. He puts James Michael McAdoo in, Ian Clark in, and takes Draymond and Clay, puts them on the bench, and I don't know. That was just a very funny sequence. But I also think that the Warriors kind of, I feel like they're developing like a bully complex. Like they're adopting Draymond Green's personality. Like Draymond.
Ooh, we're getting into a little psychoanalysis here. I like that.
That's what I'm here for. And Like Draymond yelling at Paul Pierce. I don't care if Paul Pierce started yapping at him first. That's like that just looks so bad to me from the Warriors standpoint and Draymond's standpoint. Like, you're one of the best players in the NBA. You are in your prime. Why are you going after a 39-year-old who's not really able to run up and down the court anymore? And like, it's the same thing goes with.
Damn, that was like the worst. I mean, it's kind of true of Paul Pierce, but that is a painful description.
No pun intended. But like, and then for Curry to do that point and yap it at Jaylen, and Jaylen's 20 years old. This is one of the biggest games he's ever played in his entire life, literally. And I don't know, pointing at him like, dude, like, act like you've been there. You're a 2-time MVP. I loved Isaiah's quote after the game about how, like, Steph's not pointing at Avery Bradley when he hits a three over him because he knows better. So it's like, that's just what bullies do. So I don't know. That was just pretty lame, I thought, all the way around.
See, I kind of appreciated it. I am high on whatever celebrations guys want to unveil, the crazier, the more over the top, the more insulting, the better. Give me drama, give me absurdity, give me theater. I need all of it in my life. I was a big fan of that whole situation, because then not only do you get that, but then you get Jaylen Brown reacting to it and Isaiah Thomas saying the Avery Bradley quote. It's like, it just sprouts it's a tree and it sprouts.
That's
leaves
a great metaphor.
Beauty.
I get your point and I agree with it to this extent. If Steph hit some shots and shimmied past Avery Bradley, made him look silly on a few possessions late in the game, like, you want to celebrate after those possessions and point and taunt Avery, then that would be dope. And that would be a bigger story. And that would be even more entertaining and thrilling and theatric. But like going after Jaylen, it's like, who cares, man?
So the three pointer, but it was a three pointer in a, that put him ahead 2 points going into the fourth, right? Like, that's a good shot. I like the finger. I like the finger, man. Give me more of that crap. Another random thing that happened, which was pretty wild to me. Isaiah Thomas MVP chance in Oracle Arena. That was so he's gotten a lot of MVP chance lately. He got them in Staples Center twice when they played the Clippers and when they played the Lakers. He's gotten them clearly in Boston, but to do it, even if it, and they were Celtics fans, like the Warriors fans had mostly left at the time, but to hear the MVP chants in front of Stephen Curry for Isaiah Thomas was just, whoa. And what's crazy about it is Isaiah Thomas,
a better year than Curry,
is having statistically a better season than Stephen Curry.
And he will finish. It's pretty wild. And I could not believe those tweets when I saw them, because as I mentioned before, my girlfriend is sleeping. I have the iPad on mute basically watching the game, so I did not hear any of this. And to see all those tweets,
hold on,
I make her watch way too much basketball. I can't. It was International Women's Appreciation Day yesterday. I let her have her sleep. So yeah, I didn't need to get into that, but I could not believe it. I understand that there were a lot of Celtics fans there. I heard the MVP chants at MVP chants at the Clippers game, were there not? Okay. Having attended a whole bunch of Clipper games, like that means absolutely nothing. Like the crowds there are just, it's such a terrible crowd. But to have that happen in Oracle is very surprising. I'm kind of a little sure. I know there's a lot of transplants from the Boston area in California, but I'm just surprised at how many Celtics fans attended that game. And yeah, Isaiah's having a better year than Curry, and that's one of the weirdest things of this entire season.
Yeah, and he's kind of on, I've said this before on the podcast, he's kind of on, and it sounds crazy. It sounds insane because Stephen Curry has accomplished so much, but he's kind of on the Stephen Curry career arc. Like, if you look at it, Isaiah Thomas is having probably a better season than Curry had in his first MVP year, at least offensively. And like the same way he was really good before emerging, Isaiah Thomas was, but nobody expected him to become an all-star like he did last year, and nobody certainly expected him to do all that he's doing this year. And it's sort of like the Stephen Curry career arc so far. And I don't know whether Thomas can continue rising like Curry did. I don't know whether he can even repeat the year he's had this year, which has just been an amazing, amazing year. But to be on the Stephen Curry career arc is a wild thing. And it's almost like an alternate universe. Like you're seeing what would have happened if the Warriors had traded Stephen Curry, and then like two teams later he just emerged and carried a team to number two in his conference and became an MVP candidate. Because the Warriors, like, they could have moved on from Curry a few times. They had opportunities to trade him. I think they almost moved him.
Yeah, weren't there
Monte Ellis trade, right?
And weren't there
that was something
Rondo
that almost
was
happened.
Kind of heavily speculated to be dealt. There were I don't know how valid they are, but I'm pretty sure there were some Curry Rondo rumors.
Yeah, there definitely were at the time. I don't know the validity behind that or whatever, but yeah, it's wild. Like the Kings and the Suns are so fucking stupid. Okay. The Kings, like, they knew he was a great scorer, an efficient scorer, and they decided, you know what, let's bring Darren Collison in here, guys. and then the Suns, like, they had already traded Goran Dragic. They could have held on to Isaiah Thomas, but instead they decided to move a lottery pick.
I'm looking at for Brandon Knight, Thomas's right? Numbers right now from the 46 games he played with the Suns. He shot 39% from beyond the arc on 4.5 attempts a game. That's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
like, yeah, that's one of the worst trades. You know, as it's just only going to get worse, just as like we go from here, and he is ascending. I kind of agree with you. I'm not sure I would put him. I mean, Curry's two MVP seasons, particularly the second one last year, were like, untouchable. Yeah,
the second one, that was I don't think I've seen a better offensive season than Stephen Curry
achievement
last year.
But so
Isaiah certainly isn't at that level, but if you look at the numbers from 2 years ago, it's like Isaiah has a
no, and when especially when you look at just usage and like what really weighs out in Isaiah's favor is the turnover rate, and it's kind of, that's one of the more underrated aspects of how impressive Isaiah's been this season. Just his ability to like take care of the ball, it's like so important for this Celtics team, and he just never really turns. I mean, he has, you know, blips every now and again, and most recently on this road trip, he's had some notable turnovers, like at the end of the Suns game, but he really takes care of the ball for the amount of time it's in his hands and the amount of pressure he receives on pick and rolls, particularly of late. And like, he's amazing. He's just, I'm pretty positive because of Durant's injury that he's going to be top five in the MVP ballot, probably at number five. And that's just, it's just ridiculous.
It's stunning. And yeah, and I'm not saying he's Stephen Curry, but when you look like at what he's done and how far he's climbed, like this is a guy, I say this on the podcast way too often, but
didn't
even start his career last year. He came off the bench and Tyler Zeller and David Lee both started the first game. Like, what the hell? And now he's a top five or top six or whatever MVP candidate. It's crazy. So just nuts. It is bonkers what he has done. One of the best stories of one of the most improbable stories for a player's rise in NBA history, probably. I mean, for a guy to be the last pick in the draft and let go for Darren Collison and traded for Marcus Thornton in a late first round pick. It's just wild that 2 years after that, he is now doing what he's doing, hearing MVP chants in Oracle Arena. Anyway, I got to let you go. I got to let you enjoy the rest of your day. You probably have some turtlenecks to put on or something. Michael Pena endorses himself a turtleneck.
I don't apologize for it.
He wears turtlenecks. He wears turtlenecks under suit jackets, and he looks like Steve Jobs. So I often call him Steve Jobs. But then again, I have not the greatest style sense when I go to games. I'm not the best dressed guy. I also just... I tried to get into the wrong room. I forgot my room number at the hotel. I was still on my Oakland hotel room number. I was on the wrong floor, like trying to get into some stranger's room. It's time to end this road trip. It is time to end the road trip. Anyway, the Celtics, number two in the East right now. Favorable schedule the rest of the way. Should be a fun game against Denver. I like some of Denver's young talent. And yeah, thank you for coming on, Michael. I appreciate you, bruh. Except for your Steve Jobs lookalike stuff. And everybody go check out his stuff at Bleacher Report, at Vice. Check out the Big Three podcast with him, Brian Robb, and Rich Levine. Three sharp dudes, three entertaining dudes. Check that out. They're like our little brother of podcasts. We're still the greatest podcast. If you don't subscribe to us, search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcast. iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever else. We are the greatest Celtics podcast ever created. And you should definitely listen to us daily. That is it for this episode. Thank you, Michael Pena. Thank you, listeners. Everybody have a wonderful day. Yeah, J. King and Doc Carell.